Anything Ghost, number 216. Happy Halloween. Welcome to Anything Ghost. My name is Lex Wall, and this is show number 216, and you've heard it 215 times before, but Anything Ghost is a place where people share their personal, paranormal experiences or local ghost legends, and I share them with you over the show. If you have a story you want to share, send it to lex@anythingghost.com. The old lady at Pear Tree Cottage, Bangkok, Thailand ghost experiences, an archaeologist experience with ancestral ghosts, and much more in number 216. Start off with a story from Andy in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Unexplained apartment experiences. I used to live in an apartment that was in an area where there were a lot of old breweries. I've talked to the landlord, and he told me that back in the day, the owners of the old breweries used to house their employees in them. In October of 2013, I was home alone in the kitchen. Out of nowhere, I heard a door open, and then heard footsteps, followed by the sound of the bathroom door closing. I lived with three girls at that time, so I thought it was one of them. However, I never heard anyone come out of the bathroom. A couple of minutes later, two of the girls came home, and I asked them if they had been home. They both assured me that they had been away, and that the third roommate was at work. Whenever I was in my room, I made sure the door was closed behind me. But there were times, when I was in my room, that my door would open slightly and close on its own. Another apartment I lived in was a block away, and this was where most of the activity happened. At that time, I was rooming with two guys. One of them was spending a couple months abroad, so it was just Josh and I. Josh's grandmother fell ill, so whenever he had extra free time, he would go spend time with her. On one of those nights, I was sleeping in my room. In the middle of the night, I woke up to the feeling of someone pressing down in the middle of my back. Unable to speak or move, my thought was that it was Josh playing a prank on me. When I was finally able to move, I looked, and he was not there. Nor was he even in the apartment. One time, the second roommate, Connor, came home late at night with our friend Joe. I was in my room, and I was awakened by a thud to my head. Our friend Joe tended to be a prankster, so I figured it was him coming into my room to get me up and say hi. By the time I got up and turned around, nobody was there. There would have been no way he would have been able to move in and out of my room that quickly. Not to mention that I didn't hear my door open or close. I began wondering if all these strange happenings were my imagination, or if something was actually haunting me. But that question was soon answered. One night when I was alone, I actually saw it. It was in the living room, sitting on the couch. I was having a conversation with a friend via text, when I looked up at our bookshelf. Out of the corner of my eye, I saw a shadow of what looked like a man with a fedora walk down our hallway. I mentioned this to Connor and Josh a few days later, and found out that I wasn't the only one to have seen this man. Josh, previously saying that he didn't believe all that I said was happening to me in my room, confessed that one weekend when I was away, he heard a noise in my room. When he left his room to check on the noise, he saw a shadow turn the hallway and into the kitchen. I have since moved out of the apartment. And here are a couple short stories from Emrit and London Borough of Enfield. Song in the Garden. It was a school night, and my sister and me were sharing a room at that time. I was just about to fall asleep. Our window was open, as it was a warm night. Soon, we both began to faintly hear a strange song. It was almost like a lullaby, and it was emanating from the garden that our room overlooked. It sounded like a woman. She sounded to me to be quite old. There was nobody in the garden. My grandfather is in the car. I was 12 when my grandfather passed away. I was coming back from school that afternoon. My father was at home and asked if I wanted to go visit grandfather at the funeral parlor before the service began. I decided to go and give my last goodbyes. My sister didn't go due to her sadness. On the ride there, we were playing his favorite tracks by Doris Day, but there was one song in particular that he liked, Take Me Back to the Black Hills. When we got to the funeral parlor, I cried when I saw him, and we soon left. While we were in the car on the drive back, my dad started playing the song Buttons and Bows and the Windy City. But somehow, without us even touching any buttons, the player kept going back to the same song, Take Me Back to the Black Hills, and it never stopped repeating until we got home. It was great to know that my grandpa was there listening to his favorite song. A story from Andrew in the UK. The Old Lady at Pear Tree Cottage. In a small town in Devon, UK, there is an old cottage called Pear Tree Cottage. Back in the early 90s, my girlfriend lived there with her mum and stepdad. One weekend afternoon, we were enjoying some time chatting and laughing in the kitchen. We had plans to go out that evening, so my girlfriend went for a bath. While waiting, I realized that we were actually running late, so I decided to go see if my girlfriend was out of the bath. As I climbed the staircase, a wave of emotion came over me. The pressure on my head was unbearable, and I felt compelled to sit on a step near the top. I just caught the shape of somebody standing outside the children's bedroom as I sat. But thinking it was my girlfriend, I started to talk as I looked up. I can't remember what I said, as I was still recovering. But when I looked again, I saw an old lady. Even as she stared at me, screaming silently, she looked in every direction. She was totally static, but entirely animated. The pain in my head increased until my girlfriend opened the door to the bathroom, at which point she looked very worried about me indeed. For several hours, every time I closed my eyes, I saw the old lady. Later, my girlfriend and I talked about it, as I had a hard time brushing it off. As I explained what had happened, she had a dreadful expression come on her face. Apparently, her little sister, whose room the old lady was outside of, had an old lady as an imaginary friend. Things started to really make sense as I explained that the emotions that I felt told a story, and the old lady projected that story into the families that lived there. So each member of the family played a role in the old lady's original life, and I was not welcomed, as I played the role of an untrustworthy person in her original life. A story from Marco in San Jose, California. fifth house to the left. My family and I grew up in the 90s in East San Jose. This was a time when it was much safer for children to play together on the streets or to take a bike ride or roller skate alone in the daytime. When alone on our bikes and skates, we would only stroll as far as the fifth house to the left, where our childhood friend Amy lived, and to the right, five houses to the corner of the block. I remember one afternoon in the summer, I was at home reading in the living room, my mother was gardening in the backyard, and my sister M was outside roller skating. She was 10 and I was 12 at the time. As I was reading my book, I suddenly heard the sound of my sister's skates pounding and skating at a fast pace. I peered out the window and saw my little sister racing to skate from the sidewalk from the left into our driveway as if being chased. My protective brother instinct kicked in, and I ran to the front door where she immediately opened it, stormed in, and shut the door behind her, staring at me with fear in her eyes. "What happened, Em?" I asked, now scared myself that someone had been chasing her. She wouldn't speak. "What happened? Are you okay? Was someone chasing you? You look like you just saw a ghost." After about 30 seconds of staring at me with wide eyes and fear in her face, she calmed her lungs from a fast return home and started to tell me about what happened to her. She had gone outside to skate because she was bored and wanted to go see if Amy was home to join her in skating. She started to skate past the other houses, and when she got to the sidewalk of Amy's house, she had to go up her driveway and walk to the right because her garage stuck out into the driveway. But as she skated around the corner to the front door, she saw something. It was in a long dress that looked like shreds of dirty white ragged dress. It had the face of a lady, but not old, but not young either. The skin on her face looked decomposed, scratched, and dirty. Her hair was black, long, messy, tangled, and dirty. Her eyes were very disturbing. They were super wide. She could only see the whites of them, and they were glaring at her. The outsides of her eyes were all black like sunken sockets. The woman was floating off the ground, smoothly and heading toward my sister very fast. She was just a few feet from my sister and approaching her quickly. She said the lady was kind of see-through, and even though she only saw her for about 2 seconds before turning around and sprinting back home, she noticed her hands were up as if she was going to grab her. But what scared her the most was the lady's huge grin. It stretched unnaturally wide, and it had many missing teeth. My sister quickly turned around in fear and sprinted back to the sidewalk. She felt as if the woman were chasing her. She was so scared that she didn't look back. But once my sister was halfway home, she did look back and saw the woman was up in Amy's tree. She was sitting on a huge tree limb with one hand stretching out at her. She was moving her fingers open and close, as if saying bye to her, saying bye with that huge grin on her face and huge eyes that looked just as wide from three houses away. My sister finished telling me what had happened. She took off her skates, and I walked over and looked outside the window and over to the left, to the large tree down the street. "That tree?" I asked Em. My sister walked into her room without answering. Anytime I ask her about it, she refuses to talk about it, even to this day. I told my other siblings about the story, and none of us ever went to Amy's house again. As we grew older, we'd frequently walk past or drive past the house. As for me, a chill would go down my spine when I wondered if I should dare to even look toward the front door. The story's from Anonymous in Minneapolis, Minnesota. Bangkok, Thailand, ghost experiences. In December of 2009, my husband and I went on a vacation with my parents to Thailand. We had a great time, and we were on our way home, but needed to spend a night in the hotel before getting up early the next morning. We were in Bangkok, Thailand. The hotel that we stayed at was the same hotel that my sister had had a ghostly experience at a few years prior. I found out about this after I shared my experience with my mom. We were out late and returned to the hotel about 11 p.m. It was around midnight by the time we were getting ready for bed. The layout of the hotel was just like hotels here in the U.S. The entry was located on my left when I was in bed, and the window was to my right. We were on the sixth floor toward the front of the hotel, and there were lights beaming back up, lighting the room from the window, leaving a light reflection on the ceiling. My husband needed to use the bathroom, so I got into bed. All the lights were off, because the light from outside was illuminating the room already. As I was lying in bed, I saw the shadow of a figure on the ceiling. It moved from left to right, as if moving across the foot of my bed. If it had been a shadow from outside, even though we were on the sixth floor, it might be possible. It should have been moving from the foot of my bed toward my head, or vice versa. But instead, the shadow moved from my left to my right, as if it was in my room. I yelled out to my husband, but the shadow disappeared before I could get his attention. I quickly turned on all the lights and left them on all night. Of course, I didn't sleep all night, and I couldn't wait until 4 a.m. to go to the airport. My sister had ghostly experiences at the same hotel a few years prior to mine. My three sisters and parents were on vacation in Bangkok, Thailand, a few years prior to my experience. The last few days, before they were to return home, they booked side-by-side hotel rooms with connecting internal doors. This was at the same hotel that I had stayed at. The first day, nothing remarkable happened. On the second evening, they all met downstairs in the lobby with the intention on going out. All three sisters made it downstairs just in time to meet with my parents. But my baby sister needed to go back up to my parents' room because she had forgotten something. Everyone waited in the lobby as she went back upstairs. As she was in the room looking for her item, she heard quiet sobbing cries from their room next door. When she called out, the sobbing stopped and no one answered. The minute she stopped calling out, the quiet sobbing continued. She unlocked the door between the two rooms and went to look in. She called out again and no one answered. She couldn't find anyone inside. And by this time, she became frightened and took off running without grabbing her item. When she got back downstairs in the lobby, she asked if anyone had been upstairs. Everyone looked at her confused. She proceeded to tell them what she had encountered, and everyone became scared. My parents went to the front desk to ask about the room. The receptionist wouldn't say anything but offered a different room. My parents persisted about the incident, and she refused to comment. They eventually ended up switching rooms and spent a few more nights there without incident. This is a story from Katie in Missouri. A hooting sound. This is not my story. It's a story that my high school friend told me. My friend's family was rehabbing their basement. There were two finished parts of the basement with a concrete floored unfinished part in between. The unfinished part held the washer and dryer. During the construction, one of the walls of the laundry room had been partially torn down, and there was a large hole about 7 feet up above the washer and dryer. One afternoon, my friend and her sister went down to the laundry room to get their clean clothes out of the dryer. On the stairs, they heard a weird hooting sound, but they didn't really think much of it. Their brother had been watching TV with his friends upstairs, so they thought maybe it was some noise from the TV room. The girls got their laundry out of the dryer and were folding it on a table with their backs to the hole in the wall. Then, they heard it again. This time, it was much more clear, and it came from behind them. They both spun around to confront the sound and saw a shadow. It was staring straight at them from the hole, 7 feet up the wall. When it saw them looking at them, it made the noise again. They both panicked and shot up the stairs. When they spilled into the room where their brother was and his friends were hanging out, they told him what they had seen. "It was probably the cat," their brother said. Some months later, my friend was getting ready for school. She ran into her other sister, not the one who had been in the basement with her, in the hall. Her sister seemed kind of out of it, and she asked my friend to go upstairs with her and get a sweater out of the laundry room. My friend reluctantly made her way down to the basement and slowly crept down the stairs. She wasn't even all the way down the stairs when she heard the hooting again. She turned right around and ran back up the stairs to the kitchen where her mom was. Her mom wanted to know why she looked so strange, and she sort of played it off, saying that she couldn't find the sweater that her sister had just asked her for. Her mom said, "What are you talking about? Your sister left the house an hour ago." Here's a story from Elise in Sydney, Australia. A farewell. Some ghostly experiences can be terrifying. Others, when they come from loved ones, can become treasured memories. This is one of those. A couple of years ago, my grandfather on my dad's side suffered a massive stroke and fell into a coma that lasted for about a week. My extended family and I spent the whole week by his hospital bed, sometimes reflecting in silence or crying or laughing about old stories. I felt particularly affected by this experience and spent most of the time sitting right by my grandfather's head, stroking his forehead, and talking to him, hoping that he could hear me on some level. By the end of the week, there hadn't been much of a change in his condition, although the nurses had said it would be only a matter of time. On this particular evening, my parents, sister, and I decided to call it a night and head home to eat something and get some sleep. Around 10 p.m., one of the nurses called and told us that now might be the time, as there had been a change in my grandfather's breathing. My parents decided to go back to the hospital without my sister and I, as they were worried that we hadn't slept much during the week, and there was also a possibility that it was a false alarm. So they left for the hospital, and my sister and I tried to get some rest. I must have been so exhausted, I fell into a deep sleep. Then I woke up with a start, slightly confused and disoriented. I lie there for a minute, trying to work out what had woken me up. And I slowly realized that I could feel a soft, cool hand resting on my forehead. It felt so much like my father's hand, but I knew that he was at the hospital with my grandfather, his own father. I opened my eyes very slightly and sensed, more than I saw, that my grandfather's presence was by my side. I felt him bend down and kiss me on the forehead. I can't even explain how this message entered my mind, but I instantly knew that he was saying goodbye in this manner, because he had felt my hand on his forehead so many times when he was in his coma. Then his presence was gone. I opened my eyes all the way and reached over to check my phone. The time read 3:17 a.m. Somehow, still not fully understanding what had just happened, I drifted back to sleep. About 2 hours later, my parents came home and my father woke me up, gently, and told me that my grandfather had passed away. We all cried together, and a while passed before I thought to ask my dad what time my grandfather had died. My dad told me that he had passed away about 3 a.m. that morning, just before I woke up. I knew then, without a doubt, that my grandfather had come to bid me farewell on his way out.
Hello, Lex. Hello, Anything Ghost listeners. My name is Cho Lee. I'm from Seattle, and I would like to share another ghost story. I recently shared a story about how my TV moved quite abruptly on its own. And I'd also shared a story about a woman I talked to for several hours named Barbara, who disappeared in front of my face. That was shared during the, 2012 Halloween special. Okay, I have another story here, and it, of course, they all do, they kind of boggle my mind. But I'm glad I have a place where I can share these stories. So a couple years ago, my friends, a married couple, just bought a house over in Magnolia. And they bought a house down kind of near the industrial side of Magnolia, very close to train tracks and a lot of industrial businesses. And that area happened at the previously was kind of farmland. So they bought this cute little, sweet little turn-of-the-century house built in 1903 or so, kind of tucked away, completely surrounded by condos and townhomes, and they love this house. So my husband and I helped them move in. And as I was hauling in some boxes, really the only good access or even parking area is in the alleyway for this house. I was getting some boxes out of the car, and I'm going up through the back door, this old porch door, and I'm the only one walking in. Everybody is either down in the basement or front yard or something. I walk in through the back door, leads to a nice little old kitchen area. I set the box down, and I'm in the middle of the kitchen. I turn around to go back out the door, and I have this experience, and I've had them before. This was really super jarring, though, in that the best way I can describe it, I hope others know what I'm talking about, is if you did have a third eye located in the middle of your head, you know, your forehead, and you could only see out of that eye for a moment, and what you see is so, it's like a moving picture, and it's very super real. Anyway, I turn around and walk out this door, and I have this experience where I see out of this strange eye, I have this vision that I see of a little old lady wearing like kind of a black long dress, if you will, pretty short, right around like 4'8 or something, come running up to me and screams, "What are you doing here?" And then just disappears. And it's so shocking to me, and she freaked me out that I couldn't even, I closed my eyes for a moment like, this is not happening. And I'm looking away from her because she ran right up to my face. And she was very adamant, very angry. And I stood there for a moment, my eyes closed. And I'm like, what was that? Take a moment to compose myself. I better carry on I don't mention this to anybody. I carry on with the moving and everything. But, I'm afraid to run into this woman. She was angry little old lady. And a couple of weeks go by. And the wife, this couple, she comes up to me and she's like, "You know, Jolie, I think our house is haunted." And I'm like, "Well, what makes you think that?" And she's like, "My husband keeps seeing, like almost every morning, there's a woman, a little old lady in kind of like a long dark dress that is standing on his side of the bed and just glaring at him. And recently she just started glaring at him and then pointing out the window as if he's like to go, pointing out the window, go to the porch, you know, get out of the house kind of thing. And he's so funny. Her husband is so awesome, and he doesn't take crap from anybody in any kind of plane of existence. He's half Icelandic, he is part Cherokee, he is a gigantic man who works in refrigeration. He's been a fisherman up in Alaska. He really deals with a lot of hard stuff. And quite frankly, the way he's seeing this little old lady is like, get out of my face. So after several days of waking up to this very scary, in my opinion, little old lady waking up to her on the side of the bed, glaring at you, kind of pointing and telling you to get out of the house, he rolls his eyes, apparently. This is what his wife's telling me. He rolls his eyes. He's like, look, if you don't start leaving me alone, we're going to sell the house, we're going to have it torn down, and we're going to have condos put up. And she never showed up. That was the last time he saw her. And I can't help but feel this is just, I chuckle every time I think about this story. So I thought I would share it with you guys. Several years have gone by, still no sign of the little old lady. I do hope that she's passed on and she's not angry anymore. And I guess because of the changing dynamics in Seattle right now, there's a big rift between all the big developers building the condos and townhomes, tearing down these little old, beautiful farmhouses, just great houses. It's happening a lot right now. So my friends would never actually do that. They would never tear down this house. And so the fact that he said that and threatened that to a ghost and made her go away just makes it even more hilarious for me. Okay, well, that's all I've got. Thank you very much, and keep up with all the great work, and have a good night. Take care.
A story from Kari in Willington, Connecticut. Ghostly goodbye. My husband and I were high school sweethearts, as were a number of our childhood friends. Together, we cheerfully egged each other on toward adulthood. One couple reaching a milestone first, be it a career, first baby, what have you, and the rest of us sheepishly raising our game so as not to be left behind. One couple, Tom and Sarah, early emerged as the leaders of our little pack, the first to get married, first to snag grown-up jobs, and first to leave behind the apartments of our youth and buy an actual house. It was this last part that particularly delighted our circle of friends. As real-life homeowners, Tom and Sarah became the de facto hosts of every Memorial Day, 4th of July, and Labor Day party we threw together, because their one-quarter acre of land, a kingly plot to our minds, meant no more pesky neighbors would be banging on the walls and calling the police when we got a little loud. The house was impressive, a sprawling old farmhouse. It had the honor of being one of the last stops on the Underground Railroad, a final pause between the Detroit area and the freedom offered by Canadian soil. It was looming and ancient, with drafty bits and unfinished crawlways and hardwood floors that creaked if you even thought about stepping on them. We all rolled our eyes when Tom and Sarah declared it was haunted. Of course it was haunted. How could it not be? The stories of a couple's dogs, a pair of huskies, growling and snarling into empty corners just made us snicker, and Sarah's insistence that rocking chairs would rock violently, untouched, and in empty rooms just made us chuckle. Even the couple's most famous story elicited nothing more than polite interest when it was told at parties. One day, in the week Tom and Sarah were moving in, the two of them decided to take a brief nap before the arrival of a friend, who was due to come and help with some heavy lifting. The couple flopped down on their bed, exhausted from unpacking, when they heard the front door open and shut. This was followed by the unmistakable sounds of someone stomping up the stairs and then running down the hall. Tom looked at Sarah and said, "Here comes John." Sarah nodded, knowing that the sounds were their friend who always loved to make an exuberant entrance. The couple started to get up, expecting John to fling open the door to the bedroom. But nothing happened. Puzzled, Tom stuck his head into the hallway, calling for John. No answer. Chalking it up to one of John's pranks, let's make mysterious noises in the allegedly haunted house, Tom walked downstairs, and then outside, still calling for John. John wasn't there. In fact, when Tom irritably called him a few moments later, John was flustered and apologetic for being late as he was stuck in traffic. Clearly, Tom and Sarah insisted this was proof that they were living with a ghost. But no matter how insistent our friends were that their house was haunted, none of us really cared. After all, whatever spectral residents rubbed elbows with the couple during quiet moments, they left us alone during our house parties. Several years later, when Tom and Sarah sold that old house and upgraded to a new construction out in the burbs, my husband and I offered to help with the moving process. Sarah and I took the new house station, unpacking and finding new places for everything, while Tom and my husband Ken were on the old house end of things, doing a final walkthrough and one last vacuuming session before handing the keys over to the realtor. It was a bright and sunny afternoon. Sarah and I were in the kitchen, surrounded by half-unpacked boxes of glasses and bowls, in need of new ones, when the phone rang. Sarah picked it up and said a little beyond hello, but listened intensely to the caller. She then laughed a knowing sort of laugh and said, "It was checking on us at that end, just like it did at the beginning." She put the phone back in the cradle and said to me, "The ghost said its farewells to Ken." And as I looked at her, uncomprehending, she explained. Tom and the two huskies went to return to the moving truck, while Ken stayed behind to vacuum one last time. While upstairs, over the noise of the vacuum, Ken heard the unmistakable sounds of something running up the stairs. Figuring it meant Tom had returned with the dogs, and the dogs were bounding up the stairs to greet Ken, he moved to the side of the hallway to make room for the two huskies, clearly barreling toward him. He felt the rush of bodies past his leg, looked up from vacuuming, and saw nothing. The hallway was empty. A brief tour revealed that the whole house was empty. No dogs, no explanation for the noise, nor the physical sensation of something rushing past him. Tom said he rounded the corner onto his street and saw Ken sitting on the porch, hand gripping the vacuum tightly. "It's a good thing you moved, Tom," my husband said, "because I am never, ever going back into that house again." And as a man of his word, he never has. Next story is from Christina in New Jersey. The house next door to Grandma's. Throughout my life, I've had many paranormal encounters. I've come to believe that I'm sort of sensitive to the supernatural. When I was very young, my family, my mom, dad, two older brothers, lived at my grandma's house. It was a small house, and my two brothers and I shared a bedroom. In our bedroom, there was a door to an attic. Some of my earliest memories are of being terrified of that door. I would never be able to fall asleep in my own bed. I would fall asleep in my mom's bedroom with her, and my father would carry me to my room whenever he came up to bed. I remember waking up in the middle of the night, so terrified that I would run and jump into the bottom bunk bed of my brother's bed and put myself in between him and the wall. I could always see something standing in the middle of the room by the light of the streetlight that came through the window. I couldn't make out a face, just the outline of a shadowed figure leaning down to look at me. I would never want to be in the upstairs part of the house by myself, even as I got older and we moved out of the house. When we would visit my grandma's house, I would still feel so uneasy about the upstairs part of the house. I can remember always seeing shadowy figures out of the corner of my eye. We moved to the house next door when I was about 5. My family owned both houses, and we stayed with my grandmother while my dad renovated the other house. In this house, I had my very own room, but I still hated to sleep alone. I remember often begging to sleep on the floor of my brother's room so I wouldn't be alone. I also remember, on more than one occasion, waking up to being shaken or touched in the middle of the night. Things were often moved around or missing. Paranormal experiences would come and go. Usually, they were small things like that. However, when I was 17, my older cousin moved into the house with her 2-year-old son. Things then got much more active. Having grown up with her, as her and I were the only 2 girls in the family, her and me sometimes experienced paranormal things together. Perhaps we were both sensitive, and thus the activity increased. But we usually brushed the experiences off and tried to ignore them. When she moved in, things got steadily more active. It started off as just hearing someone walk around upstairs, even though no one else was home. My cousin, my mom, and I all experienced this. My mom even told us once that she had walked out into the kitchen to see a figure standing in the back hall by the back door. She described him as a tall, shadowy man. She told us that he was there for a few seconds and then just vanished. We all came to believe there were a few different spirits in my house. This was for a few reasons. The first being that I have a dog, a Rottweiler, who is the sweetest, most lovable dog you could ever meet. She just loves to cuddle. When sitting in my living room, you have a clear view of the stairs that lead to the second story of the house. There were many times I had been sitting in there with my cousin or my mom, or even my brother or dad, and my dog would sit and seemingly watch someone coming up or going down the stairs. Sometimes she did this and was calm and seemed pretty indifferent. But other times, she sat in front of me or whoever else was in the room and growled protectively. The second reason we became convinced there were a few different spirits in my house was that we had seen the same shadow man my mom had seen, and he had clearly appeared to be a man. However, my cousin and I once set up a recorder in our bedroom when no one else was home. We made sure everything else was silent and sat on the floor with the recorder between us and started asking questions. We asked, "Is anyone or anything in here with us? Who are you? Are you connected to the house or someone here? Are you a male or female?" We asked a few other questions. I can't remember now. But when we played it back, none of our questions were answered but one. Very clearly, after we asked the gender of the spirit, we heard a female voice say, "Female." It sent chills up and down my spine. Once, when my cousin and I were about to go to sleep, we shared bunk beds in the room with her and her 2-year-old son. He had his own on the other side of the room. We heard and felt a loud bang, as if someone had hit the footboard of our bed very hard. When I leaned down to look at her, she looked as shocked as I felt, and I asked, "Was that you?" She said no. Well, it hadn't been me either. I was on Skype with my then-boyfriend, who had also heard the bang, and she tried to recreate the bang. I even kicked the bed as hard as I could, and we couldn't get it to make the same loud bang. It wasn't even close to how loud it had been. The activity began to escalate even more than that. One night I was up late in bed, doing homework and studying. The room was dark except my baby cousin's nightlight and the light from my laptop. He was asleep, and so was my cousin. I heard a shuffling sound coming from my baby cousin's bed. At first, I didn't pay attention to it, as I thought he was just moving around in his sleep. But then, I realized out of the corner of my eye that he wasn't moving at all. Only the blanket he had on was sliding off of him. It looked like someone was standing at the side of the bed and was tugging it slowly off of him. Except, there was nothing there. I watched, wondering if my eyes were playing tricks on me. And that was when his leg, now completely uncovered by the blanket, began to lift in the aim as he was slowly sliding off his bed. I didn't take my eyes off of him as I called my cousin's name loudly to wake her up. As soon as she did, my baby cousin's leg dropped, and whatever was pulling him seemed to stop. My cousin did not wake up, and I waited for a little while longer, and then nothing else happened before I went to bed, freaked out by what I had seen. The next day when I woke up, I told my cousin about it. She was very upset. She did not want anything touching or harming her son. From then on, she had him sleep in the bed with her, just in case. It wasn't too long after this that I began to wake up with scratches and bruises. I had no idea where they were coming from. I even once woke up with what appeared to be the Roman numeral 6 scratched into my leg. It was all very disturbing. The whole house became to feel weird and uncomfortable. Like there was always someone standing just behind you, watching you. One night, my cousin decided to leave her phone recording all night. We listened to it the next day. For a long time, it was silent. And then, the door could be heard opening. And then someone or something pacing back and forth next to our bed. In all honesty, it sounded like hooves, really. Really heavy footsteps. Eventually, it stopped. And whatever was there sounded as though it began to sniff and breathe into the phone. It made a sort of growling noise. And then the recording stopped. My cousin had told me that when she woke up, her phone was halfway across the room, not at all where she had left it. I hadn't gotten up at all that night, and she said she hadn't either. When we talked about it to my mom, she said maybe it was our dog. We didn't think so, however, because my dog is not allowed upstairs, and she is usually very good about staying downstairs unless someone calls her. Not only that, but our bedroom door was closed when we went to bed, shut tight, and my dog cannot turn doorknobs and open doors. We would also sometimes hear someone walking around in my attic, or hear loud bangs coming from up there. My attic is always ice cold, even in the dead of summer, when heat should rise. The attic is always so cold. It didn't take us long to discover that there was something strange about my attic door. It looked as if someone had been trying to get out, as the metal on one side of the door, where the lock is, was bent outwards, and the wood around it was broken. Other strange things would happen, such as if we ever had candles, they would flicker and go out shortly after they were lit with no real explanation. My cousin lived with us for a while, but soon after all of this, found a place of her own with her fiancé and moved out. Activity continued for a while after she was gone, and I was glad to have moved away to college by the time she was getting ready to leave. I now live back at home while I'm finishing up my last year of college, and while the paranormal activity in my house has seemed to calm down a bit, I can still sometimes hear people walking around upstairs, even when I'm home alone. Next story is from Barbara in the U.S. Kim's story. On Labor Day of 2013, my sister was rushed to the emergency room with a fever that wouldn't break, neck pain, and cold sweats that lasted about 2 months. She was stubborn, so it took her to finally collapse in the shower and black out for my mom to put her in the car and take her to the ER. She pretty much dragged her out of the house. My sister was diagnosed with Hodgkin's lymphoma. She was only 19 years old. Kim was a gorgeous girl. She was about 5'7 and skinny, beautiful model-like face, long, beautiful, luscious hair. She was very much a tomboy, though. She would fight guys and not put up with anyone's attitudes. From May to December, she was going back and forth to L.A. to get her chemo. But she would give us the hardest time. She was very angry. She yelled at my mom and said the only reason she was doing it was for her, because she was asking her to. Kim was my half-sister. She had a different dad, who was a low-life scumbag. He'd only seen her once or twice. And Kim would often cry and wonder why all this bad stuff had to happen to her. It broke our hearts, especially because we were so helpless. Eventually, Kim started staying out late and not coming home at all, for days at a time. This meant she would miss her chemo appointments. By December, she had her bone marrow taken out because in February she was going to get a transplant. That was the turning point. After that, she told me she couldn't do it anymore. She said it was too painful. She started partying and self-medicating. She said she was an adult and she could do whatever she wanted. In April of 2014, my other sister found Kim's dog licking her face, trying to wake her up as she lay unconscious from an overdose. We called 911, and she was rushed to emergency. By that time, it had been about 5 months without treatment, and her cancer had grown much out of control. While in the hospital, Kim had appointed me power of attorney. While there, I told Kim that we didn't want to lose her like that from an overdose. And as hard as it was for me, I asked that if she didn't want to do treatment, would she be willing to do hospice? She looked away and looked back at me with tears welling in her eyes and said, "Yes, that is what I want." She was discharged that day and admitted onto hospice. On September 4th, Kim passed away, with all of us brothers and sisters next to her and my mom holding her hand. Not too long after that, we held a candlelight vigil. That is where a picture I've attached comes from. My mom's friend was taking random pictures of Kim's friends that came out to pay respects to her. My mom had been flipping through them. She sent us a group text with a circle around a light orb, and she said, "Who's this?" We were all surprised. It looked exactly like my sister. We all shared the picture on Facebook and asked what everyone thought. All of her friends were so shaken up because they said it was definitely Kim. The next story is from Barbara in Monterey, California. Growling and cold spots. I'm a longtime listener, and I've also contributed a story about a haunted house my parents lived in when I was a child in Alabama. The memories of my experiences at my grandparents' house have always been very vivid, but I have not experienced anything else of note in the last 30 years. I believe that there are places that carry out the imprint of strong human emotion after people have gone, but not my house. My house has been my haven for 15 years now. I have never had any strange experiences here until night before last. I live on the coast of California. Temperatures are mild year-round. At night, I like to leave the window open and the shades open in my bedroom so I can enjoy the fresh ocean air as I sleep. My dog sleeps at the foot of my bed. He is a good companion and rarely wakes me, unless he catches sight of a raccoon out the window in my backyard, in which case he barks playfully at it. 2 nights ago, it was particularly cold out. I decided to forego the ocean air and turned on the heater instead, closing not only the window but the shades as well, which cut off the dog's view of the backyard. My boyfriend stayed the night that night, and my dog was sleeping in his usual spot at the foot of the bed. At 4 in the morning, I was awakened by my dog growling a low, threatening growl. Sitting up slightly, I could see that he was looking at a spot about 3 feet above the center of the bed. The growl sent chills down my spine, because my dog, a friendly lab, does not growl. My boyfriend rolled toward me, then abruptly sat up with a curse. "Do you see that? Do you feel that?" he said urgently, staring at the same spot my dog was growling at. He grabbed my hand and held it over the covers in the middle of the bed. Although the rest of the room was warmed by the heater, that spot felt like I had just stuck my hand in a freezer. My boyfriend was staring at the spot over the bed. His expression was a mix of fascination and horror. I peered into the darkness but saw nothing. "What do you see?" I asked. "There was a mist, a white mist. It came from there." He pointed to the closed window. "It went there." He pointed to the spot above the bed. "And formed into the shape of a man." His voice was barely a whisper by the end. I stared again into darkness. No mist. "It's gone," he said after a moment, looking at me wide-eyed. My dog flopped back down on the same spot, curled up to go to sleep. Perhaps he was dreaming. Perhaps the growling dog half woke him up. Perhaps the dog had a bad dream and started off a chain reaction. I decided on a light response. "No ghosties in bed," I said with a laugh. After a moment, he laughed too and went back to sleep. Last night, as I climbed into bed alone with my dog, I couldn't help but reflecting back on the events of the night before. It still bothered me a bit, but I concluded it was one of those mysteries in life. It was another cold night, so I went to sleep once again with the heater on and the windows and shades closed. At 4 a.m. this morning, I awoke to my dog growling once again. Sitting up a bit, I saw that he was staring at the same spot above my bed. I saw nothing. After a moment, I worked up the courage to stick my hand out above the covers and once again felt like I'd put my hand into a freezer. My dog barked sharply and showed his teeth, something he had never done before. Strangely, I did not feel all that afraid. I think if I had seen something, it would have been different. I was not fully convinced that there was anything there, although I also had no explanation for my dog's behavior or the strange cold spot. I figured if something really was there, however, my dog's reaction would indicate that it was not Casper the friendly ghost. I sat up straight and stared at the spot above my bed. My dog was now growling a low, threatening growl again. "Go away," I said sternly. "I will not allow you here." My dog stopped growling and sighed, curled up once again to go to sleep. I decided that either he had taken the stern voice as being aimed at him, or perhaps my words had sent off my unseen visitor and the threat was gone. Either way, I slept peacefully through the rest of the night. Hopefully, that will be my last experience with waking up to growling and cold spots. This story is from Adair in the U.S. Sleep paralysis. I've had quite a few things happen to me in my whole life, from the lady and the horse in the tree, which I don't remember, to the man in the kitchen, which I very much do remember. But this time I want to tell you about my sleep paralysis problem. I say problem, but really it's just incredibly frequent, so frequent in fact, that I don't even get scared anymore. I just work on taking deep breaths and wiggling my body while the rest just kind of happens. There are four stories, really, all relatively short. The first time it ever happened, I was in college. I was having this weird, incredibly lucid dream, and then I realized something was wrong. I woke up just enough to see no one but myself and my roommate were in the room when I heard laughter. I recognized the voice immediately as a friend of mine. Not my roommate. Her voice was deeper. The only problem with this was that she didn't live in my dorm. She didn't even live on campus. And the voice had sounded like it was right over me, as if someone was straddling my body and getting right into my face. Now, I knew even way back then about sleep paralysis. I knew it was just my mind playing tricks on me. Probably. Except, the voice wasn't just laughing anymore. It was taunting. I remember at one point it giggled and said, "Aw, does she want to get up?" Which was about the time I truly started freaking out. I started fighting to move, and I felt like I was thrashing, but my body would not respond. My breathing was too even. I felt like I was choking. And only then did I feel my arm twitch. I latched on to that feeling and tore myself awake with a scream so loud my roommate nearly fell out of bed. The second time, I was a little more prepared. This time, I was at my parents' house, which was only 6 years old now. My dad's a builder, so we move a lot. I remember waking up and thinking it was such a bright day. I laid in bed and watched these two children play jacks or something at the foot of my bed. A few things about the kids. They were probably 6 and 10, a girl and a boy, respectively, dressed in 1920s, 30s style clothes. They looked nice, like the clothes a kid would wear to church, with burlap bags over their heads, tied closed around their necks with twine. When the kids realized I was awake, they came to the side of my bed and started talking to me. They told me they loved the house and were sorry for scaring us, that's another story, and how they stayed out of the man in the kitchen's way. Different man in the kitchen than the one I mentioned earlier. And how the woman in the window really scared them and asked if I could please make her go away. I don't remember breaking out of that one. I just remember sitting up in bed and gasping for air. The third time it happened at a friend's house. The house itself had been built in 1909 and had just been passed down for generations before landing with my friend and her partner. I often go over to hang out whenever I'm bored, and sometimes I sleep on their couch because I don't want to drive home. This particular time, I was snoozing, about to go to sleep, when I heard some steps from the kitchen. This wasn't unusual. I figured my friend or her partner had gotten up to use the bathroom. Except, I hadn't heard a door open or close. And my friends might be ninjas, but their kitchen is small, and it was weird that they hadn't even turned on the light to the bathroom. Then, I heard the steps again, coming down the hall, which was past their bedroom. They stopped just outside the arch to the living room where I was sleeping. Now, while all this was going on, I was wiggling away, trying to wake my body up, and again, not very worried about it. Finally, I broke the cycle, took a deep lungful of air, and turned over to go to sleep. I figured it was my friend's great-great-uncle or something, and I figured if he hadn't bothered me yet, he wouldn't. The last time, and the most recent, happened maybe 2 or 3 weeks ago. I was in my apartment, just waking up, literally moving as if to stretch, when I realized I couldn't move. I was curious. No one had died in that apartment. I'd made sure to ask. And it didn't feel malevolent, just like a thing that happened. Then, I heard children giggling, and I figured, oh, it must be the kids. And I started in on my wiggling spree. Before you ask, yes, I truly am blasé about spooks. I've got a long history of supernatural experiences on both sides of my family, and I've never been attacked or felt afraid for my life. I'm not sensitive, as far as I know, but my friend, the one with the couch who is truly sensitive, once told me I'm something like a spiritual rock. I'm hard to move, but fun to poke at. This story is from Martin in Argentina. Cloudy with a chance of spirits. This story began a couple years back, 2010 to be precise. I had moved into a two-bedroom apartment by myself, after splitting up with my girlfriend of 4.5 years. Half a year went by, and I ended up reuniting with a girl I had dated when I was 18. We hit it off, and I started dating steadily. One day, while I was sleeping by myself in my bedroom, I woke up in the middle of the night. I looked up and saw a black cloud-like shape floating by the foot of my bed. I felt a jolt of electricity running through my spine, and I turned to my left to turn on my nightlight. As I turned back, there was nothing there to see. My heart was pounding frantically, my hands shaking. I lied down in bed again, but I couldn't get to sleep for the rest of the night. I didn't tell a soul about that at that time. I didn't want to look crazy, and I especially avoided telling my girlfriend Annie, since, you know, I wanted her to keep coming to my house. A week or so went by with no otherworldly apparition, until one night, while sharing my bed with Annie and dead asleep, I was awakened by a jolt from my girlfriend. She was panic-stricken and asked me to hold her tightly. I put my arms around her and tried to make her tell me what was wrong. She wouldn't say, so I left it to rest, and we both fell back to sleep. The next morning, she decided to tell me that she had wakened up during the night, and looking at the foot of my bed, she had seen a black cloud-like shape floating there. It had a streak of blackness coming out of it, and it was creeping toward us, as if trying to wedge itself between us. Hearing her say this, and knowing I hadn't told her what I had seen, I proceeded to tell her what had happened to me just a couple weeks earlier. After telling her the whole story, she told me we should do a cleansing of the apartment, and that her mother, who studied a little of the shaman and sorts, could do it. Annie's mom came to my place with candles, herbs, and incense, and was about to perform her arts. She asked Annie to leave the two of us alone in the apartment to avoid whatever was lurking in there getting attached to her when she cast it out. When she left, my mom-in-law started turning on candles, preparing an incense holder like the ones in Catholic churches, filling it with herbs and gunpowder. When everything was prepared, she asked me to follow her around the room, moving along every wall and holding candles and her incense, chanting some kind of thing. We started in my own bedroom, moving along the walls, till we went full circle, chanting and waving candles and incense. We then moved to the next bedroom, which I had turned into sort of a storage room. This bedroom, I had told my mother-in-law, had always been colder than the rest of the house by a couple of degrees. Quite noticeably, especially in the summer, when the house felt like an oven, but this bedroom was as cold as a walk-in refrigerator. When we moved our right into that room, I started suffocating, almost like I was unable to breathe. I told her so, which made her move as quick as we could. As we came out the door, I was fine again. When we finished walking around the rest of the apartment, she told me that, after she left, I had to put 3 pink candles that she had brought with her on a plate forming a triangle, and then place it at the doorstep of the cold bedroom, with the door closed, and leave them there until they burned out. After she left, I lit all 3 candles and proceeded to arrange them in a triangle on a plate, which proved to be more difficult than what I would have expected. Each time I tried to complete the triangle by sticking in the last candle, any of the other 2 that were in place would fall. Not always the same, mind you, but a different one every time. This went on for a couple of minutes, until I somehow managed to get them all to stand in one place. Then I took the plate to the hallway. When I placed it on the floor by the door, all 3 flames stood at a 90-degree angle from the candlestick, as if they were hit by some strong draft, only without the flickering of the light. Just to be sure there were no drafts, I checked every window in the apartment, only to see the blinds tight shut, windows closed, and no way for a draft to get inside the house. I left the plate like that and got the hell out of there. I came back hours later after all this happened and found the candles burned all the way down. Now only a puddle of dried pink wax with 3 short stems fossilized in the puddle. From that day on, I never had another encounter with anything supernatural. That is, of course, until I invited an old friend of mine to come by and be my roommate, and he brought a whole new myriad of entities with him. This story is from Andra in the U.S. Something in the Closet. I answered an ad for 2 people looking for a 3rd roommate. The room was in the top floor of a 3-flat old Victorian in San Francisco. It was a railroad flat, meaning it had a long hallway and bedrooms on the sides, and the kitchen was in the very back of the flat. There were other people being interviewed for the room at the time. I was told to just come on up and wait my turn to be interviewed. I walked up the stairs and past the front entrance on the right side was a sparsely furnished bedroom, with one window facing another building and a closet on the left side of the room. As I walked past that room, I had an overwhelming sense of fear, being threatened for no reason at all. It was kind of the fright that hits you in the gut and makes the hair on your neck stand up. I brushed it off as perhaps being nervous about the interview and quickly walked past that bedroom. The interviews were being done in the kitchen in the back, and the two people interviewing looked very tired and stressed out. They seemed very nervous and winced a lot. I thought that was very curious. There were a few people still ahead of me, and they said the room for rent was the first bedroom, which I had just passed, and to go on in and take a look at it while I waited. I walked back down the hallway and felt the closer that I got to the bedroom, the more I felt heaviness in my chest and a sense of dread and fearful panic. I felt like something was going to hurt me and that my body was in high alert. I got to the threshold of my bedroom and stood there. I don't know how long I stood completely frozen in that spot, but it seemed like an eternity. I felt that someone was glaring intensely at me with a hatred and anger that was so overwhelming that it made it hard for me to breathe. But no one was there. I had never experienced anything like that before or since. As I stood there, I felt that negative, angry energy was coming directly from the closet. It was a big walk-in closet and shaped like a T. I somehow knew that something very bad and scary was in the left-hand side of that T-shaped closet. I felt as if there was some force field stopping me from entering the room as I stood at that threshold. It was as if it was an actual wall that I could not see but was keeping me from entering. I then felt the room turn icy cold, not just drafty, or because the heat wasn't on, but a kind of freezing cold, as if you were inside a walk-in freezer, and you could see your breath. It wasn't like that a few minutes ago, and I wondered how the temperature could have dropped so drastically in that room, and not the rest of the flat. I got goosebumps, and the hairs stood up on my arms and the back of my neck like static electricity. I kept staring at that closet, and part of me wanted to test whatever it was there that was doing its utmost best to keep me out of the room by trying to move my foot at least a little past the threshold. But it was just too strong, and I couldn't do it. I was then called to come back into the kitchen for the interview, and as I turned around, I saw a cat run down the hallway. I know this sounds cliche, but it was a black cat. And it took me a bit to register that there was something very wrong with what I just saw, and I realized then that the cat did not have its feet on the floor. It had run about a foot off the ground and had actually never touched the ground, as it moved its feet faster than a normal cat would run. It was a solid-looking cat, not transparent, and I was dumbfounded as to why I'd seen it running on the air. It was such a bizarre experience. I went through the interview, and I mentioned to the two potential roommates that I had seen their cat. They looked at each other in a strange way and said they didn't have a cat. At this point, I knew I would never ever want to live in that flat. As I left, I ran past that bedroom and down the stairs. My boyfriend at the time was waiting in his car outside and took one look at me and asked what the matter was. I looked like I had seen a ghost, he said. All the color had drained from my face. I told him about my experience, but my overall feeling was that I knew those people were in danger of being harmed in some way from whatever was left inside that closet. I actually picked up the phone several times that night, unable to sleep, and wanting to call those people and warn them about that angry, hateful spirit in the closet. But I thought they would think I was crazy, so I didn't call. To this day, I regret not calling. The last story we have for show number 216 is from Becca in California. An archaeologist's experience with ancestral ghosts. I'll start with the fact that I'm an archaeologist. At this point, I've had many different types of archaeology jobs, and none of them are as glamorous or adventuresome as Indiana Jones leans on. Much of our work consists of watching a machine move soil, or doing a pedestrian survey, basically getting paid to hike while looking at the ground. However, the very first job I had after graduating with my BA was not the typical archaeology job. Due to an unfortunate series of poor choices by a construction company, a Native American graveyard was uncovered, and many of the remains removed. Since this was very culturally and politically sensitive, I will not share where it happened, or which tribe claimed these individuals as their ancestors. But I will share the experience I had when I entered the project as an archaeologist assisting in the reparation and reburial of these ancestral remains. I was relieved when I got this job, because my first work day happened to line up perfectly with graduation. As I spoke to my new boss about the daily tasks and responsibilities, she also explained that we'd be working with a tribal crew, and they would conduct ceremonies every week as a way of cleansing ourselves from ancestors who might want to follow us home. As much as I didn't want to believe that ancestor spirits could follow me home, I was admittedly nervous about this potential. Let's call it a work hazard. The night before starting my new job, I had a nightmare. I was in a long house with white skeletal figures, and we were sitting in a circle around a fire. They were speaking a language I didn't understand, but I could tell they were very angry. I was uneasy when I woke up, and I decided to tell the tribal elder about the dream when I got into work. Within the first hour of my first day, I was already getting a private ceremony to remove ancestors. I like to think they were playfully hazing the newbie, but I doubt it. I experienced several strange things at the site, but I was the only one who witnessed them, so I kept telling myself that I was being paranoid. That is, until my neighbor informed me of my visitors. I had been working on this project for about 3 or 4 months, and I lived a few miles away from the site. Every time I'd come home, I had a routine of taking off the dirty outer layer of my clothes while I greeted and made small talk with my downstairs neighbor. One day, as I was going through this routine, she asked how I was, and I mentioned I was really tired. I slept poorly the night before. It was just one of those nights where you wake up immediately after falling back to sleep. After telling her this, she looked confused. She said, "Yeah, I wouldn't sleep well either if I had 10 guests over all night stomping around." I froze. I lived in a studio apartment. Alone. No guests. Just me. And I didn't get up once that night. I told her that I didn't have anyone over, but she didn't believe me, and simply asked me to be more quiet next time. I went to the tribal elder, and he thought it best to permanently install the ceremony cleansing relics in my car so the ancestors would get the "I respect you, but you're not invited" hint. The experiences continued until the reburial a year later. I would hear out-of-place noises and see movements out of the corner of my eye, all of which was explained by the tribal members as signs that the ancestors were uneasy. One time I was driving back to my apartment late at night, and I heard a movement in my trunk. I wasn't afraid that it was a person or an animal. I just thought it was the ancestors keeping me company on my late-night drive. I was really tired, and the tribal members had told me that sometimes the ancestors come with you to protect you, and the easiest way to cope with them is to talk to them. I felt a little silly at first, but I started talking aloud. I thought all was well until I'd gotten back to the town where I was living. About a mile away from home, I saw an owl on a lamppost, which to this tribe was considered a bad omen. Although nothing terrible happened immediately afterward, it was enough to make the tribal elder keep a close eye on my well-being. I never felt threatened by the ancestors' presence. In fact, I could empathize with them. Who would want their eternal rest ruined by a bulldozer? And that puts to rest show number 216. And also it might put to rest Anything Goes for the year of 2015, because it's already the middle of the month. I might get one out the last day of the year, but that's probably it for this year. So if you have a story you want to share for Anything Ghost number 217, send it to lex@anythingghost.com, a personal paranormal experience or local ghost legend. And for everything Anything Ghost, go to www.anythingghost.com. And don't forget, I have a VIP group. To join the group, there's a $15 one-time charge, and you're in there for the lifetime of the group, which will be the lifetime of the podcast. And what you get is the complete archives of Anything Ghost, and there are some other extras I throw in there. So if you want more information, go to anythingghost.com, and there's a VIP group link that'll give you a little more information. All right, everyone, thanks for all your stories, and I'll talk to you in show number 217 of Anything Ghost. Have yourself a wonderful holidays and a wonderful week, and take care.